सहनावत् सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। Thank you very much, Vibhinder Bhai, for your very kind words. And the question that he asked is that we find so much chaos and disorder in the universe. Therefore, a question naturally arises in our mind as to, is there an order in the universe? Is disorder the reality of the universe? Or is order the reality of the universe? If order is a reality, then what is that order? So these questions do arise. Particularly with variety of events going on in the universe, the media always reporting events of violence, abuse, cruelty. It looks to us like that's all there is in the universe. Seems to be, it looks like there is violence everywhere. And then they bring to us the reports, a lot of dishonesty, corruption, that seems to be everywhere. Bring reports of lust, look at lust, anger, greed. What Bhagavad Gita calls kama, krodha, lobha. Everywhere reports of rapes and abuses going on, result of lust. The violence and cruelty going on, expression of crowd or anger, and corruption, dishonesty going on, the expression of lobha or the greed. So everywhere we seem to see the manifestation of kama, krodha, lobha. Kama, lust, krodha, anger, lobha, greed. That's all we seem to see. Or that is what is always reported to us. And therefore, one may conclude that all that is in the universe is this kama, krodha, lobha, lust, anger, greed. That's all that seems to be in the universe. Is that how the universe is? This is what you call evil? Lust, anger, greed, all of this evil. Is there all evil in the universe? Or is there any goodness in there? What is the inherent nature of the universe? Is evil the inherent nature, or is goodness the inherent nature? What is the universal order? Is cruelty the universal order, or kindness the universal order? Is goodness the universal order, or is evil the universal order? It is very important for us to understand this. Because depending upon our understanding, our form, our attitudes and values. In the life, we live our life based on certain basic attitudes and values. And these attitudes and values originate from our understanding. If I understand that the universe is a cruel place, always out to attack me, I must protect myself, fight with the universe. If I think universe is a loving place, then my attitude will be different. So what, depending on my conclusion or my understanding of what is the basic reality of the universe, what is the basic order of the universe, that is how my attitudes and values in my life will be all determined. Understand this. Whatever we do is all based on our understanding. Our understanding of what the universe is, our understanding of what we are, our understanding if there is a God or not, all this is very important to us. And it is my understanding about myself, about the world, about God, that determines how I live my life. And understand that everybody has conclusions about himself, about the universe, and about God. Everybody has conclusion or opinions about that. We cannot but have the conclusion or opinion. We cannot but have the judgment, because we are, as human beings, we are endowed with what we call intellect, of which the nature is to judge. We are self-conscious beings. We are conscious of ourselves, and we are conscious of the world. And therefore, there is bound to be a judgment or conclusion about ourselves as well as about the world. This is how it is. As far as creatures, other human beings are concerned, perhaps they don't have this problem. They don't have the kind of self-conscious that we have, or the conscious of the world that we have. They have some kind of consciousness. Just enough to lead their life and fulfill their basic needs. For human being has consciousness which is much more evolved. And therefore, we are conscious of ourselves. Who am I? I'm conscious of who am I, what am I, whatever my opinion may be, whatever my understanding may be. I also am conscious of the world, and therefore, I always have an opinion about the world and an opinion about God. To say that there is no God is also an opinion. To say there is God is also an opinion. To say, oh, God is kind is also an opinion. To think that God is cruel is also an opinion. So we have these opinions, judgments, understandings, and our life is based on this understanding. Our priorities, our values, our attitudes, our whole life is based on this understanding. We analyze any event. Some shooting took place somewhere. You find that the people who carry that out has certain understanding of what they are, what the world is, what their role is, what their priorities are. That determines what values and attitudes they have. And there are people who spread love and kindness. Well, that is based on their understanding. So whatever we are, whatever we do, all of that is based on our understanding, our conclusion, our opinion of who I am, what the world is, what God is. Even the people who are totally illiterate, who have no exposure to any kind of an education, who have never been exposed to any scriptures or any kind of discourse, they also, everybody has his opinion. Because it is the nature of human intellect to have an opinion, to have a judgment about whatever it comes in contact with. Whatever I come in contact with, first thing, I have an opinion. So I'm in contact with you, I have an opinion about you. You are in contact with me, you have an opinion about me. And the way I communicate with you depends upon my opinion about you. If I think that here are all very serious seekers, then I will communicate in one some way. The people are just sitting there, just watching a show and wondering what it is, who this strange person is, what is he going to talk about. That's what I think this audience is. Well, I will, my communication will be a different kind. Understand that the way I communicate with the audience depends upon my understanding or conclusion about the audience. And the way you listen to the speaker also depends upon your opinion or conclusion about the speaker. Sometimes you look at a person and say, he doesn't seem to know anything. You already concluded. Looks like he's a biased person. Looks like he's an orthodox person. Looks like he's a fanatic. Something like that. And then we will evaluate whatever that person says in the light of that conclusion. The point is that our understanding or our conclusions are the most important thing for us, because they decide how I live my life. They decide what I understand as my goal. They decide what I understand as the means of achieving that goal, because constantly we are trying to achieve certain goal, certain end. What is that goal? It is determined by my understanding. How to reach that goal is again determined by my understanding. And therefore we find different people doing different things. Why? Because everybody has their own perception of what the goal of life is, their own perception of how to achieve that goal, and therefore different people do different things. So Vedanta addresses this basic necessity in life. What's the basic necessity? The right understanding. Vedanta calls it knowledge. The right understanding is the most important thing. And Vedanta teaches that. That is where you begin and that is where you end. Meaning that basically all we need in our life is just the right understanding. So now question is, what is the inherent nature of things? What is the core of this universe? What is the core of myself? Who am I in reality? What is the universe in reality? Well, when we see disorder, chaos, cruelty, it is natural that we think that that's how the life is. Meaning that usually we are accustomed to take as real whatever we see. And so our conclusion is based on what we perceive. But then Vedanta says that there's no rule that what we see has to be real. Vedanta gives a stock example of rope snake. Sometimes in the evening time like this, still there is a lot of light, but when there is twilight situation, walking in garden, then on the roadside, I see a snake and I get scared. I get stunned, frozen, not knowing what to do, scared. Fortunately, a friend of mine is following me. Swami, what happened? Why have you stopped? I can't even speak. See, snake. He had a torchlight with him. He shows a torchlight there at the snake, and it turns out that it was only a piece of rope. So this example is called a rope snake. What is a rope snake? Where in reality there is a rope, but which I perceive as a snake. So my response to that object is determined not by what the object is, but the way I perceive that object. Similarly also, at any moment, my response to whatever I confront is not based on what it really is, it is based on how I perceive it. We have our own perception, and that determines how I respond, what I do, what I don't do. Therefore, our perception. So the world is a chaos, there is disorder, there is evil everywhere. Suppose there is somebody's conclusion. Perhaps it's not your conclusion. Suppose that's the conclusion. Then our question is this evil the reality of life, or is goodness the reality of life? Just as, is the snake the reality of that object, or the rope the reality of that object? What is superficially perceived is a snake, but what it really is a rope, and so also what is superficially perceived is disorder, injustice, chaos, cruelty. That's what I perceive. Vedanta says that like rope snake, meaning that's what you perceive. What really is something quite different. What is really there? Is manyness the reality? Is diversity the reality? Or is unity the reality? Is manyness the reality, or is oneness the reality? Are differences, dissimilarities the reality, or is sameness the reality? What I perceive on the surface is what? All dissimilarities. Everything is different from everything else. That is what I perceive. Is that the reality, or behind all these dissimilarities, behind the inequalities, behind the disparity, is there the sameness? I see manyness. Is that the reality, or there is oneness? Is that the reality? There is a very beautiful verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Says, samam sarvesu bhuteshu tishtantam parameshwaram vinashyatva vinashyantam yav pashyati sa pashyati. The verse is, yav pashyati sa pashyati. The one who sees this really sees. Sees what? Samam sarveshu bhuteshu tishthantam. One that obtains equally in all beings, one who is the same in all dissimilarities. One is one in or in many, the unity in diversity, the sameness in dissimilarity, the imperishable in the perishable. So what we see is all changing. What we see is all perishable. What we see is everything has a birth, everything will perish. So whatever we perceive is all perishable. What we perceive is many, what we perceive is all dissimilar. That's what we perceive. Bhagavad Gita says, one who sees the unity in diversity, the sameness in dissimilar, the one in many, the imperishable in perishable, that person sees. Meaning that, just as about the same object, there can be two quite different opinions. One opinion is that this is a snake, other is it is rope. So both are seeing, isn't it? One sees the object as a snake, other sees the object as a rope. So please tell me, who sees? Both are seeing. One sees and does not see. Other one sees and sees, right? So is the one who really sees. In the rope snake example, who is the one who really sees? The one who sees the snake, does that person see? Or the one who sees the rope, does that person see? Who sees? It's a very difficult question. Oh, you thought that I'm just saying, I was asking, seeking an answer, thank you. And see, the response of the person who sees that object as snake is one, the response of the person who sees that object as a rope is altogether different. So also the response of the person who sees unity in diversity, who sees one in many, who sees imperishable in perishable, who sees kindness in cruelty, is it possible? Who sees kindness in cruelty, his response will be different. What do you mean, Swami, kindness in cruelty? This person is cruel. He's a terrorist. He's cruel. It is true. But then, is that the superficial view of that person? Or is that the view of the reality of that person? What we call a cruel person. Sometimes we find that. A person is extremely cruel also, sometimes we see even kindness in that person. Even for a terrorist, when his own child comes before him, how does he behave? In a cruel manner or in a loving manner? In what manner will he behave? In a loving manner? One who is so, he is a thief or a robber. Same person, when a dear friend comes before him, becomes not a robber, but becomes a giver or charitable person. Is it not so? Meaning that, is it not true that people sometimes display altogether a different trait given in different situations? Similarly also, is it possible that this person who is very cruel to us could be kind within himself? Is it possible? Let me give you an example. So the example of a piece of sandalwood. I guess everybody knows what sandalwood is. Sandalwood is fragrant by nature, is that right? Sandalwood is, so this is sandalwood, fragrant by nature. This is not supposed to be a mark of beauty, by the way. It's supposed to be a mark of worship. But still, then why do you use Swami a fragrant wood? Because we are worshipping God, and therefore the best should be offered to Him, and therefore it is not, supposedly. I'm putting this not as offering the best to myself, but offering best to the Lord, and therefore a fragrant sandalwood. Meaning that sandalwood is fragrant by nature. I mean, that is accepted by everybody? All right. The same piece of sandalwood, if kept in water for 2-3 days, you know what happens? Its outer surface gets rotted. And that same piece of sandalwood starts stinking. You should experiment and find out. But this is true. Those who use sandalwood regularly know, sometimes they forget that in water, then it does happen. So thus a piece of sandalwood is stinking. Now, for a person who is uninitiated, who does not know what sandalwood is, poor little child, if she wants to go, then let her go. Or if you want to lie down, you can do that. You don't want to punish her, you know. Poor thing is sitting here with all this kind of bombastic, discourse. Shraddha, wow. Beautiful. So now we have a piece of sandalwood that is stinking. The one who does not know sandalwood would think that it is stinking and throw it away. However, the one who knows what the true nature of sandalwood is would take that piece and rub it against the stone. And when the outer stinking layer is rubbed off, then what do you find? You find fragrance emerging from that sandalwood. Now when you... Is that fragrance imparted by us, or was the fragrant inherent in sandalwood? So now there are two things about that piece of sandalwood. One is stink, other is fragrance. What is inherent? Fragrance. What is stink? It is incidental. Let us use that word. Incidental. What is incidental? That which comes and goes. Why did that incident happen? Because of the wrong contact of the sandalwood with water. And then we have the right contact, the same stink goes away. So, superficially it looks that this piece of wood is stinking. We will dismiss it, conclude that that's what it is. Therefore, then we have to go to somebody who is wise about sandalwood, who knows the true nature of sandalwood. And he tells us, he guides us, hey Swamiji, don't throw it away. Rub it against the stone. Then the nature of fragrance becomes manifest. Meaning that it is possible that something of which the nature is fragrance, even that can also stink under certain conditions. But any time the stink is unnatural, is incidental, is subject to coming and going, and even when it stinks, its inherent nature is fragrance. Only what happens is that A superficial sting stifles or becomes an obstacle to the manifestation of fragrance. And therefore, we don't experience it, even though it is there. Something is there, and we don't experience, it's called unmanifest. What is there, but not experienced, is called unmanifest. And by rubbing the sandalwood against the stone, it just becomes manifest. Not that you have created the fragrance, just made it manifest. So now the question is, the cruelty that we see, the disorder that we see, the injustice that we see, is it inherent or is it incidental? So this is a very important thing. The way I respond to that stinking piece of sandal will depend upon what my understanding is. If my understanding is that inherently it is fragrant, then I will treat it in one way. Similarly, a person who is cruel outwardly, if my understanding is that inherently that person is kind and loving, then my response to the person will be of a different kind. Is it not so? Then I will not give reality, just as I do not give reality to the stink of the sandalwood, even though I experience it. And I give reality to the fragrance, even though I don't experience it. The understanding the true nature of sandalwood enables me to not give reality to stink even though I experience it, and give reality to fragrance even though I do not experience it. Similarly, it is my understanding that inherently every human being is a kind, compassionate, loving person. And I will not give reality to the cruelty even though I experience it, and I will give reality to kindness, even though I may not experience it. You know what will that enable us to do? Just as by accepting that stinking piece of wood as inherently fragrant, enables me to do what is required to remove that stink and bring to manifestation the fragrance, so also, when I experience a cruelty, but not give it the reality, then I will do something which will enable me to bring to manifestation that kindness or love. So question is there God? Looks like in all this disorder, there seems to be no order, there is an order. What is order? That the inherent nature of every creature is love and kindness. Even the wild creatures, such as tigers. Can you imagine a tiger being a loving creature? Can you imagine? Have you seen a tiger, how it behaves its own cubs? Somebody told me this experience. In India, this person was a forest officer who lives in the forest and takes care of the forest. And he being what he was, he had a number of pets, many wild animals were his pets. A female tiger also was his pet, imagine. Because he could establish relationship with her. Now, as a forest officer, he had to travel for supervision in different areas. And there it would happen that sometimes for 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, he may be absent, away. So when he leaves, then all these pets are left behind, including the female tiger also is left behind. and she would get hurt, upset, that he has left her behind, he has deserted her, and she would feel hurt. When he comes back, she would not talk to him, turn away from him. But he knows, so he goes to her, caresses her. In a few minutes, slowly and slowly, her resentment goes away and her true love for the master comes. And then the behavior is different. She expresses her love. How do they express? By licking you. Unfortunately, the tongue of the tiger has thorns on that. When she licks this fellow, his skin comes out. Anyway, that's her way of expressing the love. The point is that there also inherently there is love. If love is God, then inherently He is there everywhere. In what appears to be wild and cruel everywhere, the same is love is there. Then becomes a challenge to us. It's easy to take the cruelty as reality and dismiss it. But to accept that in the core of the cruelty also there is love and kindness is a great challenge to us, to bring to manifestation that love. And that we start doing with our own self. When we say that that cruel person is loving and kind, in fact that applies to me also, that I am basically a kind, loving, beautiful person. Begin from there. So start with our own perception of ourselves, that God, who is the nature of love or kindness or beauty, that God is the self of all, equally resides in all, including myself. And never Vedanta presents as goal of our life the perception or realization of seeing that God in myself and in everyone. Yaf pashyati, sa pashyati. One who sees that, he sees. Other fellow, even though seeing, does not see. Being the one who sees, a kind, loving, beautiful person, even apparently cruel, he sees. The other one who concludes that cruelty is real, he does not see. And what happens is, we are not seeing what is real. We are deprived all the beauty of life, unfortunately. Our life then is based on all wrong understanding, therefore wrong values, wrong attitudes. And therefore, that life becomes a failure. On the other hand, if our life is based on right attitude, right understanding, then we are compassionate to the person. We will not return the cruelty with cruelty, we will be compassionate in spite of the apparent cruelty. I'm not suggesting that you go and shake hands with that person or whatever, but the idea is, in our heart, how shall we be? Swami, does it mean that we should let them go? We should not punish them? As far as the behavior is concerned, we have to follow the norms of the society, that person must be restrained because that person is a danger to the society and so he should be restrained, etc. However, you may punish that person, but punishing not out of anger or resentment. You do what you do to that person out of only concern or love. Very tough, not easy to display that compassion in spite of the apparent cruelty. It's not easy. You know what it requires? it requires not a transformation there, it requires a transformation in myself. So seeing what is requires a transformation in myself. Right now I see what my mind allows me to see, which is seeing the snake where there is a rope. So Vedanta says that is called superimposition. You're superimposing the snake where there is a rope. You're superimposing something which is not there and taking it to be real and then conducting ourselves. Therefore, start with the reality as to what the reality is and make that as a basis of life. This oneness, harmony in the whole universe. Unity in diversity. Just as in our body. Our body is made up of many limbs and organs. Every limb has its own place, its own name, its own function. They are all different from each other. And still, in all this diversity, there is a unity. Meaning that it is oneself that informs all the limbs and organs of the body. Is it not so? If you touch me here, you are touching me. My toe, you are touching me. Back, you are touching me. Why? Because I am present everywhere. Who am I? I am the one in many. The unity in diversity. The same in dissimilar. So just as in here we see the sameness and dissimilarity, the unity, this is how the universe is. Then our basic values will be different. The basic value of life will be the kindness and love and compassion. That's not easy. It is not easy to be kind. It is not easy to be compassionate. Not easy to be loving. Why is it not easy? Because of something within my own self. I want to be kind. Something doesn't allow me to be kind. Hit him! Bam! What is it? All the distortions that are now stored in my mind on account of my so wrong understanding so far, on account of giving reality to what is not real, all kinds of reactions, all kinds of projections are stored in my mind. Vedanta calls it raga and dvesha, attachment and aversion. Meaning that right now in my mind there is attachment and aversion, or kama, krodha, lobha. There is anger in me, there is greed in me, there is resentment in me, there is jealousy in me. There is revenge in me. All sorts of things are there. There is love also in me. Kindness also in me. At the same time, this taking revenge, and this jealousy, resentment, both these opposite things are there in me. In me, I am often a kind person, but sometimes I become cruel also. Usually I am a good person, but sometimes I behave like an evil person. So in that, what is real, what is inherent, what is incidental? In me also, that whatever cruelty, anger, etc. are incidental. In Vedanta we call it mithya, superimposition, unreal. The reality is the kindness, goodness. So that I should make the basis of my life. How do I do that? Bhagavad Gita teaches that whenever you perform any action, And that's what we do from morning till evening. We always keep doing something or the other, right? Whenever you perform an action, make that action an occasion or opportunity to invoke the goodness and kindness from you. Is there unmanifest? Goodness is there within me, but it is not experienced. Kindness is there, not experienced. We just say, what is there but not experienced is called unmanifest. So what do we need to do? What is unmanifest must be made manifest. My true self must be made manifest. Then only I will be true to what my true nature is. How do we bring it to manifestation? So Bhagavad Gita explains, Lord Krishna says, make every action an opportunity or event or occasion to bring out the goodness from you. So now what happens is, when I am about to do something, there are two forces which try to take hold of my mind. The evil in me, the cruel one in me, the jealous fellow in me, the greedy fellow in me also wants to dominate me, and the kind, loving, charitable also wants to dominate me. Both these contrary forces try to dominate my mind. Usually, unfortunately, that anger, etc., are very strong, powerful, and they usually dominate. And even though there is love and kindness in me, it is not strong enough, and therefore, usually it is defeated. So what should I do? I must remain alert and make sure that my goodness, my kindness is invoked, is manifest, and that's done by deliberately subduing my tendency of being unkind, tendency of being self-centered, tendency of being cruel, tendency of revenge, tendency of jealousy. Thus, every action becomes an opportunity to subdue what is not. So there are two things in me, something that is real and something that is not real. What is real? The goodness, the kindness is real. That cruelty, evil is not real. And therefore, I make every action, every interaction, an occasion to subdue what is not real and to strengthen what is real. You follow? That's the program. It's not enough that we are given the understanding. We should also have a means of making understanding real, isn't it? I don't have to change the world. Fortunately, to see the goodness, I don't have to change the world. I need to change myself. That's enough. Once upon a time there was a king. And once he expressed a desire that I want to go around the city and just want to see everything. But make sure that there are no pebbles, no thorns, nothing that will hurt my feet, because his feet are very delicate. Therefore, he ordered the whole place, the whole city be covered with leather. So when he walks, his feet are protected. That's what he ordered. People didn't know how do you fulfill that order? Where do you get all this? When do you do this? Fortunately, one of his ministers was a wise person. He said, either we cover the whole town with leather, or we cover the feet of the king with leather. See, Similarly, either change the whole world or change yourself. We try to change other people. That's our usual approach. Do this, don't say that. All the time making demands upon others as what they should do, what they should not do. How they should be, how they should not be. In that process, keeping myself intact. So what is yoga? Yoga is transforming ourselves. What is samsara? It's trying to transform or change the world. What is yoga? Changing or transforming myself. How do you do that? By the right values and attitudes, which are based on the reality of my own self. As I say, because the forces of evil, the anger, etc., are always strong in me. Therefore, they try to dominate me. Thus, I make every action, every interaction, an occasion to subdue that evil and strengthen the goodness in me. I have to do that. It will not happen automatically. This has to be done. This effort is to initiate it. How? By new understanding of what is the reality about me. In me, there is something real, something unreal. The goodness is real, evil is unreal. And therefore, I constantly strengthen the goodness and try to subdue the evil. I may not succeed every time. Because in spite of this understanding, in spite of all this good saying, you find me becoming angry, What to talk of anybody else? Why? Because sometimes you are not alert. Sometimes the force of evil are very strong, doesn't matter. What happened, happened. Proceed. And try again, and again, and again. But if you keep on doing this, ultimately the goodness will prevail. Upanishad says, Satyameva jayate nandrutam. The truth conquers, not falsehood. In the beginning, it looks like the falsehood conquers. If we see the epics and Puranas in the in the Indian tradition, like there was a battle between Rama and Ravana. Most of you must have heard Ramayana. Battle between Rama, the force of goodness; Ravana, the force of evil. That battle went on for a long time. Very fierce battle. And at some point, Lord Rama also became bizarre and said, you can't destroy this fellow Ravana. The hydra-headed demon, we just could not destroy him. But then he was, no, Lord, don't worry. He also has his death. And then you'll be able to do it. Continue. Ultimately, Rama won. The idea is that ultimately the forces of goodness will win because they are real, and forces of evil will lose because they are unreal. In fact, the whole world is trying that way. In the world, all the efforts to establish peace. It is by people who are wise people. For wise and thinking people always want peace, and they always try. There are other people who want to disrupt peace also, so those two forces are there. But then ultimately, the forces of goodness will prevail. So people ask, Swami, will this world ever change? It has to change. For our own goodness, it has to change. And we can start the change from our own self. So, understanding the order in life. What is the order? What's the harmony? This one, basically we are all one. Even though outwardly we all look different. In the core, we are all one. The ornaments are many. One is called a bangle, another is called an earring, a bracelet, an anklet, all different names and forms, but in the core, they're all one, they're all gold. So the ornaments are different, the outer names and forms are different, but the core is one. Therefore, what is the ultimate order? What you are is what I am. What I am is what you are. And therefore the wise person, then God ultimately reduces to the self. The God is realized as his own self. Then nothing remains separate from him. Nothing is separate from him. He becomes all-inclusive. This is what the Upanishads teach us. That's what Vedanta teaches us. And we begin, number one, from right understanding, which gives rise to the right values and attitudes, which enables us to slowly transform ourselves. And the beauty is that as our mind slowly changes, our perception automatically changes. No separate efforts we made to change the perception as the mind changes. As the mind, which is distorted, becomes straightened, automatically my perception also will change. And when my mind becomes totally pure, the perception will be one among many, the same among dissimilar, the love among hatred, the imperishable among perishable. Yav pashyati sa pashyati. One who sees that, sees. So we come from, in the beginning it's a value, right now I don't see. But I understand that even though I do not see, that is a reality. And that is how I live a way of life, to make that reality or truth a reality of my life. So begin with that understanding, which culminates into seeing or the real knowledge. Begins with that understanding, culminates into the knowledge. So this is understanding the order in life. So we conclude here, and if you have some questions, we can answer them. That's it. We try to be good. We find that we are not always able to be good. We try. So what is meant by balance is that we try to the best of our ability and then hope to do better as we go along. So right away we won't be able to display this value of being kind to everybody, because our own fellow inside doesn't permit us to do. In fact, he says, hey, don't be kind. What will happen? They will use you, they'll exploit you, they will rob you. So it starts threatening. So we get scared. So therefore we go only this far, not further. Okay. But then slowly but surely we'll get the strength. So the extent to which we take steps on this path, to that extent we discover a little strength. More inner strength we discover, more we are able to live those values. All the strength you discover, you live it totally. It's a process. It's a process. How do we go about teaching our children? So that is what we do by way of teaching them our epics, by telling them the various stories, because in the beginning, the children are not mature enough to understand. And not only that, we should know that, as I said earlier, it is not easy to be kind. Because being kind very often involves a certain amount of pain, certain amount of personal suffering. So, otherwise everybody would be kind. But because being kind involves sometimes pain, suffering, and we have a threshold of that pain. Everybody has an individual threshold of that pain. How much pain I can take? How much suffering I can take? And that much you take, not more. Meaning that my kindness is up to this point, not beyond that point. Right now I'm not ready for more than that. So respect our own limitations and follow these values and slowly hope to stretch our limitations, meaning stretch our abilities. Now children don't have this, what we call the wisdom, to draw the lines. And therefore, if you don't draw the lines, you'll get damaged. Following values in life requires a lot of wisdom. To understand what that value is, to understand how to practice that value, to understand what is the limit in which I can practice that value? What is my limit? If that is not taken into account, it's possible that we may hurt ourselves. And so children are not ready. We cannot teach this to children right away. We can only teach them by telling them stories of great people, and how they lived their life, give them some kind of an idea. As they grow, then we teach them how to implement these things. Actually, part of the curriculum of schools or bring any religion, that is true. Should be. Right. Teach them in the language which they can understand, and teach them, give them the bite that they can chew. You follow? So, give them the bite that they can chew, and communicate in a language that they can understand. The both things are important. Yes. So we have, for example, a program called Purna Vidya. Arshaveda Gurukulam has come out with a publication called Purna Vidya. Now we are concluding this, so you can sit for a couple of minutes. Alright. And this is the teaching children from age 6 to 15. As the children grow, you give them the appropriate lessons. It is true that we have to give lessons to children, to anybody for that matter, in keeping with their level of understanding. Oh, yeah, okay.
Last question. It should be the fourth question. The school will teach how to be non-biased, all those things. But the parents are biased. So we give them double message. So the value should be part of only in fourth at home. That's what I would answer for.
See, mother is the first teacher.
Yes.
Father is second teacher.
Yes.
And the school teacher is the third teacher.
Yes.
So ideally, the parents should be the ones,
yes,
who should be trying to practice these values so that they can teach by setting an example. So parenting is a tough job, that is why. Because children look upon parents and their ideal as a role models. And therefore, it's very important to convey the right message. And it's true that ideally it should begin with parents, who should first learn. We think that the children only have to learn. They always come and say, Swami, you're building temples for children. They think children need to learn. They need to go to class. We don't need anything, but we also need. So we should learn, then only we can teach them. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha.